everybody. I'd like to welcome you on my podcast, Renew Motherhood. And this episode is Be the Change and Your Kids Will Change. And I'd like to welcome my incredible guest, Claude Larson. And yes, I'd like to hand it over to you. Please briefly introduce yourself.
Well, hello, Blanca, and thanks so much for having me on. I just love having the opportunity to speak to people about things that I have done. I am, like the rest of you, multifaceted. I have written a book. I was a teacher for a very long time, watching the social skills of teenagers decline dramatically. Wrote a book that helped my students, helped me, and I have gone on to self-publish to help other teachers and guidance counselors and parents and teenagers. I am also an artist. So after 25 years in the profession of teaching, I retired from that and I've been making art for a very long time, but now I have the benefit of time to dive more deeply into it. I've got, a website and a YouTube channel, and I love it. I love it. I love it. I try to get in my studio every day, or at least most days of the week.
Yes, wonderful. So what art are you doing?
Right now, I work in three mediums. I started working in textiles because I was a home seamstress. I made clothing. I made clothing for my kids. I made things for my home. And then one day I said, wow, I have very little free time. Why am I spending it making what I could buy in a store? So with that thought in mind, I courageously gathered up all my sewing patterns, threw them out, and said, I'm not going to follow anybody else's directions anymore. I'm going to make whatever I want to make, and I'm going to make what I know I can't buy, what is uniquely coming from me. And that has been the most wonderful journey of 25 years. At the time of this recording last week, a week ago today, actually, I received an award for my artwork from a national organization. So
congratulations to them.
I know. I was really a little speechless, but I think it's like anything, you work at it and nothing happens overnight. It just happens over time. And if you love it and you're committed to it, there's everything is possible,
I like wonderful. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing here.
it's so exciting. Like it's just so exciting. I don't know how else to describe it. It's a feeling where, because honestly, 3 days prior to that, I had gotten a rejection email. And my first thought was drag all your art supplies into the backyard, pour gasoline on it and set it on fire and never make another thing, because I'm so tired of rejection. And then 2 days later, I receive an award. So I'm like, okay, maybe not burn down the studio,
Oh, I love that. Okay, so let's dive into the topic.
Okay.
From the sidestep. So you have been working as a teacher, you have told me, and this is so amazing. So what were your subjects and how old have your children been that you taught? Because this is crucial for the next steps, I think.
Yes, I think so. So I worked for 25 years in New Jersey public schools, and I predominantly taught teenagers, mostly eighth graders, also seventh and sixth grade. So translation for that would be like from 12 to 14 or 15 is where I spent most of my time. And it's funny, looking back on it, you never want to sound more grandiose than you are, but it's like, oh no, my expertise was actually motivating 13-year-olds. So if anybody out there has ever been in the presence of a 13-year-old, I actually know how to motivate them because I am an expert after 25 years of doing it. So
absolutely, absolutely.
Right, because they can be pretty hard to, you know, they can be pretty hard to move, the immovable object, right? And you have to find ways.
I'm just wondering which mother can say this from herself. So 25 years with a 13-year-old.
I know, and that's the thing, is like I got wiser, right? But they just kept being the same, you know, age, which is quite the advantage, because when you have your own 13-year-old, you're like, geez, I hope I don't mess this up, because you know you get one or two shots at it, right? Hopefully you get it down before it's too late. But yeah, they it's a very challenging age, and I had a lot of people say to me like, oh, I could never teach that age. And I was like, yes. And I could never teach like 6-year-olds. I couldn't do it. You know, like, don't give me 25 of them, because it's not in me to like tie shoes and like zip coats and like do that. You know, I'm like, no, you got to do this for yourself. Like, let's buck up here. But you know, eighth graders, they're not, they have a sense of humor, most of them, you know, and you can, you know, a little self-deprecating humor goes a long way with them, and you can rationalize things for the most part. Like, again, for the most part, you know, some 13-year-olds, when they're having a bad day, forget it. Just get out of the tornado, save yourself and wait for it to calm down. But yeah. And that's the skill, right? When to give them a little encouragement, and when to let them, you know, settle and find their own pace. So,
and then you, after all those years, you suddenly have seen a change in their behavior. And let's talk about this. What happened?
Yeah. So I started teaching in 1986, and I retired in 2019. So over that span of time, I mean, think about the things kids did not have. You know, a lot of kids didn't have home computers. They didn't, you know, video games, it wasn't a thing. You know, they went outside, they rode their bikes, they played kickball with their friends, and, you know, had adventures. And all of a sudden, you know, screens came in and computers, and everybody had their own. And then social media came in, and I watched over time, every year I would see like, what will be the greatest distraction this year? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was like a silly little like fidget toy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, these are very annoying, you know? And honestly, my last year of teaching, they would group text, leave my room, you know, from all different rooms. They were group texting each other, meet up in the bathroom, and vape or get high.
Oh.
13 years old.
Oh, 13. Wow.
So were it not for the technology of being able to group text a bunch of people, and if you didn't have that smartphone in your hand, I don't think it would have ever evolved. But kids being kids, they're going to push the boundaries. They're going to see what the limits are. And they are going to like do things you wish they didn't. I mean, I did it too. It's just that the nonsense that I did wasn't nearly as dangerous. Yes. It wasn't dangerous at all. I mean, the line has moved, you know, but you know what I thought, like, oh, I, you know, went to the library after school and I didn't tell my mother, and boy, was she mad, you know, like, boy, was she mad that I was at the public library and I wasn't home as expected, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, I got in trouble for that. Now, the things that they experiment with and the nonsense they get involved in is really, it's scary to us. It's potentially very harmful to them. And so my last couple years of teaching, I was watching this progression, this decline of self-awareness, the shortening of their attention span and the lack of ability to focus.
Mm-hmm.
They were just getting involved in things they shouldn't be getting involved in. Their the opportunity for getting into trouble was much easier. And they were taking those opportunities, quite frankly. And so my concern became not, will they learn my physics and chemistry this year? Mm-hmm. It was like, will they get through this year and like grow up to be successful contributing adults? Mm-hmm. You know, and which is, I mean, that's always the goal of a teacher. You know, I never pretended like, oh, I'm going to have the next Albert Einstein. Like Albert Einstein was like, it didn't matter who his teachers were. He was going to be that, you know? Yeah. And so I never like kidded myself, like the next great, you know, astronaut is coming out of my classroom, because you don't know where they're going to come from, really. But I always thought when they leave here, I want them to like, you know, have responsibility, understand timelines and deadlines, be able to work on a team or in a group with a lab setting, work with safety. You know, there were things that were overarching for my entire year. And I noticed that those things became not only harder to instill in them, but to the point where I was making no difference whatsoever. It didn't matter what I said. Every day, it was like, I think it's Sisyphus, right? The stone at the bottom of the hill. And he's like pushing the boulder up the hill. And every day was like, oh, and the boulder's down at the bottom again. Like I left there every day saying like, well, I've made no difference. Like, why am I getting up at 4:30 in the morning and preparing myself and doing this and coming here and working hard and affecting zero change in these students? I was really struggling. And I, you know, I was halfway through the year. Say again.
It's frustrating, isn't it? So
it was, I had like
do your best and nothing comes out.
Exactly. Tension headaches, like tight shoulder, you know, I was literally in physical pain because, you know, the body keeps the school.
Responses.
Of course. So, you know, I was going through all this and one day, I mean, it was obvious. It was halfway through the year. And normally eighth graders, like you see this maturity because you say, okay, pretty soon they're going to go to the high school. They're going to get a lot more freedoms, a lot more liberties. But they'll be ready for it. And I was halfway through the school year and they were not ready. I had seen zero maturity, zero growth. And I thought, okay, my job is to get them ready. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing my job, essentially. Mm-hmm. Right. Because,
but you did what you have always done. So,
right.
You...
Right. But it was no longer working. Right. So I pondered on that and I said, okay, I'm going to teach them the things that they clearly don't know that have nothing to do with my science curriculum. Mm-hmm. I had to teach, you know, I was like, no, I guess nobody at home was talking to them about their attitude, mm-hmm. or working in a way that you are putting your best effort in. Mm-hmm. They did not understand. Some of them had manners, I will say, you know, please and thank you. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of them did not understand what gratitude was.
Wow.
Right. And it's a huge difference. It's a huge difference because you can teach, you know, you teach your little ones, oh, somebody gave you something, you say, thank you. Right. Or if you want something, you ask by saying, please, you can teach that. But gratitude is a whole different thing. And really by 13 or 14, you should understand.
You have to feel this.
Yeah. You got to feel this inside. When somebody like genuinely goes out of their way for you, you don't just say thank you, you feel it. You feel the gratitude, right? And they did not. They did not. They felt very entitled to everything. And they did not appreciate the effort of anybody else. So I just started making a list. Like, these are the things I noticed. These are problems. These are big problems. And I decided to address it. And so every Monday, and this was one of those moments as a teacher, you know, like you know how people will have a dream that like they're public speaking and they're in their underwear and oh my gosh, and you know, everything falls apart, blah, blah, blah. Well, this was like the teacher nightmare. Like, I'm going to stand up in front of a bunch of 13 and 14 year olds and teach them a life skill. And I might fall flat on my face and they might laugh in my face. And I have no idea what's going to happen because now I am way out of my lane. I am not in my comfort zone because I understand the chemistry. I can explain all the physics things. I have, you know, this whole other, you know, box of knowledge, but I don't know how they're going to respond to what I'm going to be talking about. Are they going to look at me like she has lost all of her marbles? It's, you know, we're done here. And the first day, I mean, they got it. They knew I was serious. I just sat there. I waited for them to stop being distracted, which was a concept I kept bringing up to them. Like, you guys practice distraction. You're trying to do five things at once. You can't focus on one. Mm-hmm. I literally waited for their attention and they were like, oh, okay. You know, desks cleared. Don't take anything out. I don't want to see a phone, you know, like none of it, put it away. And I talked to them about the power of their thoughts.
Wow.
And I led them through this little crazy little meditation that I had learned in one of my classes, because I'm a Qigong teacher and a Qigong healer. So I'd learned this Qigong meditation. It's actually quite remarkable, where you put your wrist crease together, you match it up, and you put your fingers together, put one hand in your lap, close your eyes, you focus on your hand, and all you do is you just put all your focus on the palm of your hand, and I'm guiding them with, like, your fingers are getting longer, they're touching the ceiling, they're through the ceiling, they're through the building, you know, you're touching the top of the trees, you're touching the clouds, you're touching the edge of the atmosphere, right? And I'm just like meditatively bringing them through this. And then I'm like, okay, open your eyes and put your wrists together. Sure enough, one hand, your fingers will be longer than the other.
That's great. Wow.
Right. Like, because your mind can change your physiology is basically the idea here. So at this point, the class, you know, they're like kind of sideways glancing at each other. And at the end,
they were magic happening.
Dead silent. Like, I was like, wow, they are silent, you know? Yes. And so, you know, so I talk about the power of your thoughts. I take them to this meditation and I'm like, you can control what you think about. You just did it. Like, you have proof. This is proof, right? You want proof? Here it is. Like, you know, and then of course I'm like, okay, squeeze your hand. Now check your finger. Okay, they're the same length. Really, I did not, you know, this is not permanent. You're not going to be like dragging your knuckles along the round one day. So you're fine. And this is what I came to find out about that day. So I did it each class, very similar response. I come to find out other teachers had trouble starting their class because all the kids were having a conversation about what happened in my class.
Yeah.
Then I found out
this is completely new.
The kids in the locker room were taking forever to get changed because they were having a conversation about what happened in my class. And then at lunch, they were the lunch aides saw me in the front office and they were like, all the kids were talking about you at lunch. And I was like, in a good way, you know? And they were like, I don't know, but they were into it. And they were talking about it. And I was like, they're talking about it. When they could talk about anything else, hanging out with their friends, they were talking about what happened in my class. That's so great. Yeah, I mean, it changed. So the course of the entire week was different because when they walked into my room, now suddenly I wasn't just like that woman who's trying to make them do stuff they'd rather not. I might know something that they want to know.
You got the authority.
Yeah. They don't always want to know you know, Newton's laws, but maybe she's onto something here, you know? So, you know, somehow it had value for them. Great. So I went on and I promised myself that even if they laughed in my face, I could take it for 10 Mondays. I was like, I will do this for 10 Mondays. It either works or it doesn't. They'll graduate. Nobody will ever talk about it again, whatever. But I had to do something.